In today's episode, I speak with Zelim Benayat, who is the co-founder and CEO of Bento, which is a tool which gives you the chance to say, okay, link in bio and then on Instagram or LinkedIn or whatever. You have one link. If you click on it, you have all the different social media platforms. You have maybe a GitHub graph with all of your contributions. You have maybe images, maybe docs. And that's really cool and helpful. For like creators or freelancers, and we talk about building Bento, about selling Bento to Linktree. It's a really cool platform, I think, which I used myself. I will also put this link, my Bento link, into the show notes so that you can get a basic understanding of what Bento is. And I would say let's get it started. Welcome to a new episode of the Digital Economics Podcast. Today, I speak with Zelim Benayat, who is the founder, the co-founder and CEO of Bento, which was acquired by Linktree. And it's a really, really cool tool. And you have like such an interesting life. So I really wanted to invite you to a podcast, and I'm happy that you're here. Is this like a good introduction for yourself, or how do you tell, what do you tell people what you're doing?
First of all, thanks for having me. It's a good introduction. Co-founder, most recently co-founder of Bento. And I'm happy that at least someone out there thinks I have an interesting life.
You definitely have. Definitely have. I think listeners will be convinced of that as well after this episode. So I wondered, Bento is like a tool. I think people know Linktree. And there are many other tools like this where you easily can create like a short website about yourself with all the important social media profiles of yourself. How did you came up with that idea, and what problem does it solve?
How do we came up? So first of all, Bento, yes, it's a tool for self-expression, a sort of quote unquote micro web page, if you want. The easiest way to describe it maybe to your audience would be, it is bringing back MySpace in a sense, because we thought it should be one singular page to showcase everything someone is, create, does. And they can do so in a few simple clicks by just adding links to their different social profiles that they have online, or their different art or products that they have online. They all basically link it together on a page called Bento and can basically style it to the way they like it. Basically, they express themselves using Bento.
And it's typically used for linked for Instagram, so that you have one link which can people click.
It definitely got an uptick in the link in bio space, yes. Because I think people started to see it as the highest abstraction of their online identity, because they could take their Instagram or their LinkedIn and their Snapchat and all put it onto one place. So the highest abstraction of their online life. So yes, they were using it as a link in bio. However, we also had a lot of designers or freelancers who would use it as their portfolio, for instance, and just sort of reference it as their actual landing page, as their actual web page about themselves.
And how did it start in the beginning? Like how did you thought, okay, there are already tools, but they are not doing the perfect job. We can do this better.
Yeah, so Bento initially was not focused on being a link in bio place or product. It was focused more on solving a problem that Mujeeb and I had personally, which was we were building so many different products. We wanted a place to show it to people. And we had a huge backlog in our G Drive. And obviously, you know, sort of showing G Drive links to friends is kind of annoying. We thought about GitHub, obviously, but GitHub is not really accessible. And so we wanted to have a unified sort of space on the internet where you can just talk about the products that we're building and showcase it. And this was the start of Bento. It actually started off with a different name called Creator Space, because we believed creators as builders, as makers, as engineers, designers, design engineers, that's what we sort of thought about when we said the word creator. And so it started off as Creator Space, and it was much more focused on a sort of long form blogging page in that sense. It was similar to Medium, where we would basically help people write a long form text and then sort of enable them to upload pictures, videos, demos of their products, and thereby have sort of a little creator space that then they can sort of show to other people.
What made you switch today having more like a micro page?
Yeah, I think maybe you're more sort of product focused. Listeners already see the downside of such a product, which is it demands tremendous upfront work and upfront commitment by the user until they get to a point of value. And you can think about value as the moment when they share it with a friend, for instance, or you can think about the moment of value once they see their work displayed online, once they type the text, once they uploaded the pictures. But all of these moments of values are so far into the future after you start using the product that sort of the commitment is way too high for most of the people. You know, in easy terms, you call that the white space problem, in a sense that you're in front of a white page and you somehow need to fill it yourself to have a perception of value. And that's obviously a tough place to be in if you have a consumer product. Because, you know, as a product person, I believe in certain foundational aspects of humans that would be tough to work against. And one of them is definitely laziness. Right? We're all inherently kind of lazy. I think all of us, we just want to have convenience in that sense. And so if you demand so much work from someone until they get value, that's not a good place to be. And so we actually took this thought and asked ourselves the question, okay, how can we accelerate the delivery of value? And when we thought about the problem space, we started to understand that most of our users, they have their work online already. They either have it in G Drive, they have it on Product Hunt or on GitHub or somewhere on the internet, be it ArtStation, Dribbble. And so we thought, what if we help them link to that existing thing and we make the linking just as sexy as possible? And this is then sort of, this is how the initial idea of Bento came up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was impressed how fast I was like. So I normally try to like make a small demo or register myself when I invite people. And I was doing the same with Bento. And I think it took me like 20 or 30 seconds because I have all the links like easily accessible and just put them in. And then like after 30 seconds, I had my Bento profile.
Yeah,
and it actually looks really good. So if people want to get an understanding of Bento, I will just put my Bento in the show notes so that
they
can see how it looks like. And I was impressed like how fast the onboarding flow is, because I think this could be way more complicated, or I know from Linktree that it's way more complicated.
yes.
How did that come? So Linktree is like the leader on the market. I think they have the most established product. Definitely not the best one, I would say. But Linktree, so it's a really good one, really reliable, etc. But I think I like Bento more than I like Linktree. And I think there are also like tools which solve specific problems out there for micro pages. Yeah. How did it come that Linktree said, okay, we buy a competitor?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, to go back to what you said in the sense that Linktree has not the best product out there, I think it's a matter of what you measure, right? And this sort of goes back to, I think, the two different philosophies that you see at play between Bento and Linktree. And this, I think this explanation would lead into why there was an acquisition. If you think about Linktree, in a broad sense, it's basically a router. In a sense that someone comes from a point A, wants to get some information to then go to a point B. So it literally routes people from A to B. And Linktree's job is the routing. So they focus on a CTR, so on the click-through rate. And the higher the click-through rate is, the more successful Linktree is as a product. Because Linktree's main users are big-time influencers or big musicians, just big famous personalities out there that always want to convert their fame into sort of something monetary or some real-world engagement, be it a concert, selling tickets, something like this. This just then brings you to a product that optimizes for click-through, which then leads you to sort of the idea that you as a product almost need to be invisible to the user. Because the user doesn't care about you as a product, the user cares about the information that they're looking for. And I think Linktree did a beautiful job optimizing for that. Now, if you take that idea and you think about, okay, how do you build a $10 billion, $100 billion company out of that? This is where sort of the challenges then arise. Can you build a company on top of a product that actually doesn't matter to the user? Can you build a category-defining company with a piece of software that users actually don't want to sort of consciously engage with? I think this is where sort of the challenging questions come up when thinking about Linktree as a company in regards to their product. Now, when you think about Bento in the same vein, the way I wanted to build Bento is as a destination, because I believe inherently there is more value in a destination. And so this is why Bento is much more visual, much more expressive, much more sort of well-suited to tell a story about the actual Bento owner. And we did that deliberately. So we really focused, one of the core product principles was, how can we make people look as good as possible? How can we make their work, themselves, just that expression of themselves, how can we make that look as good as possible? Because if we help them look good, that information will be easily accessible. And if information is easily accessible, people actually stay on the page to engage with it, because the information is right then and there and not somewhere else, right? And so these two different sort of ways of approaching a given market, I think led to the idea of an acquisition. Because Alex, the founder of Linktree, he is tremendously smart and far-sighted, and he started to understand that probably you need to become more a destination than a router in the future. Because again, the destination inherently has more value because it retains users more, meaning you have more sort of daytime with users, and daytime you can start monetizing, be it with social commerce that they're leaning into now, or be it with, I don't know, just mutual engagement between creator and their audience, and you start monetizing that. And I think Alex started to see that and also saw the challenges that Opera had for Linktree doing it themselves. And so this is then why we decided to team up.
Do you think there will be more acquirers by Linktree of micro page niches so that they will try to build like a monopole on that kind of topic? Or do you think you got like a lucky situation?
I mean, it depends. Lucky for who, right? just kidding. I don't. So first of all, I don't think Linktree will buy more specific link and bio players. There are multiple reasons. I think one reason that I start to see is, and I'm speaking out of my own corner, not Linktree's, is the fact that reaching Linktree's scale is tremendously expensive. And so there are a lot of players out there that sort of try to establish themselves as sort of the go-to link and bio product. But they will reach, or yeah, they will all get to the same sort of challenging environment as Linktree is right now, which is you will have exhausted your natural user at one point, and then you will just need to spend your way into the expanding sort of user groups. And it's tremendously expensive. And so sort of that natural sort of moat that comes through scale which sort of then translates into sort of that data mode. I think Linktree is very well positioned and currently is not in need to, is not forced to buy new players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, everyone knows like the name Linktree and everyone is like aware that like Linktree is staying for this. And for example, link in bio is something which some people will understand, but some people won't. So probably mm-hmm. they did a really good branding job. Do you think that was the hardest part for Bento and is the hardest part nowadays as well? And also for Linktree doing this like marketing thing that you have like to do so much to explain people your product and to get people using your product?
I think, you know, to reframe that question, we could sort of think about what is Linktree or Bento used for and do users understand what it is used for? I think if we think about that question, Bento, due to its smaller scale than Linktree, is currently still experiencing purely organic growth. We haven't, to this day, we are millions of users in and we haven't spent one dime on marketing. And that's because we haven't yet exhausted the natural user of Bento. Now, with Linktree, it is in fact a challenge to educate people for why they would need a Linktree. Right. And again, that's due to the nature of the product, which feels like it's a product for quote unquote Insta famous people. Am I Insta famous? No. So why do I need Linktree? Right. However, now the job of the product is to reframe itself to tell users, hey, you can use a Linktree or a Bento because you have stuff to tell about yourself. You know, you might not be Insta famous, but hey, you're still a cool person that deserves their own space on the internet to more holistically talk about yourself, right? And sort of that educational process certainly will take time. And I believe that it actually will start penetrating in the market and people will start having fun having their own little micro page.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I'm so impressed that you have millions of users without spending a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
I think there's like this beautiful thing called product-led growth, which helps you like growing a product organically, like with users sharing your product, etc. Did you build something like this, or do you think it was mostly word of mouth that people were just talking about it and recommending it to each other? Like for speaking about mm-hmm. Bento.
A Bento. Yeah, I mean, look, if you would have been sort of part of the product discussions, product-led growth, PLG, and community-led growth might have been two of the most sort of talked about aspects when it comes to go-to-market. Now, you know, if you talk about product-led growth basically is the idea that the product itself gives you a reason to sort of bring in new people. Right. Whereas community-led growth is the thought about you have a community advocating for your product, and by growing the community, the product sort of gains more value, and thereby sort of there's this natural flywheel because people want to be part of the product in the community. And I think luckily for Bento, we thought about these two aspects of product growth and go-to-market rather early on. And we did that because it is an inherent part of the value of Bento that there are at least two people, two parties. We called it atoms, that there are at least two atoms in the system. Because if you have your Bento in isolation, it's kind of cool for like 2 minutes. Kind of proud about yourself because you look sexy on that thing and your stuff is kind of cool. However, the most of the value of a Bento comes in the form of a view, right? The idea that someone out there somewhere in the world saw you looking good and saw your stuff that you are building, right? These are the two magical moments of Bento. I created my beautiful page and I think I look sexy, And then the second magical moment is you actually have a view, right? And so if you think about that aspect of the product, it naturally lends itself to a product-led growth, because our users, by design of the product, started to share their bento. And this brings us to one of the core product principles that I kept on pushing, which is, I mentioned it before, we have to make you, the bento user, look as good as possible. There's no way around it. I didn't want to have any shortcuts when it came to that. I didn't want to have any monetization around sort of expression-focused features. I didn't want to cut any corners when it comes to the aesthetic beauty of the product, because it leads to sort of this innate need to share that, because you're going to look so good. It's like, hey, I want to show it to everyone, right? And sort of this then led to the fact that the second party, once they saw bento, they were like, heck, like Salim looks so good in that thing. Like, I want to have one, right? Because then I can show it to people, right? And so due to this sort of inherent product loop, you could call it product-led growth, due to that inherent loop, we started to realize very early on that we now need to foster community around that. Because if you start fostering community, you even lean more into the fact that you have this interconnection of these nodes that leads to more and more and more views. And for us, more importantly, views lead to a better feeling about yourself and an extension of bento, right? And so the third hire at bento was Valerie, an amazing go-to-market, founder-focused, community-focused person who really sort of loved the idea of building community around bento. And, you know, she basically was the person who went on Twitter and started interacting with many, 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 many bento users, many thousands of bento users. She sort of had the idea of starting a Discord channel where we can sort of foster even more interconnectivity amongst our community and basically grow them as a community. And for us, obviously, get us even closer to the user, because proximity to the user, as everyone knows, de-risks sort of product building. Right. And so basically it was two birds with one stone, or 50 birds with one stone, because the advantages were just like tremendous. And this is how we could sort of develop, keep our product velocity really, really high, because our roadmap was tremendously de-risked.
I think obviously you did a good job with both things. So let me jump to both. First with like the product-led growth part. If I see my bento page, like I see like a big button, create your bento, and I see this little explore icon where you can see like more bentos from other cool creators. Can you do you have some numbers? Do you have some tracking on like how good this is working? How often do people click on this? Is it realistically happening? I mean, obviously it should be. If not, you wouldn't have that button. Can we talk about this first?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if like actual numbers are interesting, because I mean, they sort of exist in a vacuum. But I think more interesting is to talk about the behavior. Yes, it does happen. For sure. And again, it's because the viewer of a bento can sort of, I don't know, project themselves into the position of having a bento themselves, right? And that's due to, you know, the narrative power of a bento, the storytelling aspect of a bento, but then also due to the beauty, and then at the end, to the ease of use of bento. Right. And so that loop of I see a bento and create a bento is tremendously strong. Yes, it was our primary growth. Yeah,
I really like that. Like sometimes it's so simple.
Yeah,
and I think I'm sometimes overcomplicating a product like growth. This is just a perfect example for like simple but good done product like growth.
But yeah. Again, I think if it's the end of the cascade, that button. Right? Because it really starts with sort of the clarity of thought about what is the value of bento. And the value of bento truly is to make you as a user shine. And by making you as a user shine, you tap into this mimicking sort of behavior or into also the vanity of a person that then leads them to feel good about themselves. And if I see your bento, I want to feel good. So we just put that button there because it's a natural end of a cascade that was created way back at the beginning.
Okay, understood, and we'll try to implement something like this in every product I build from now. Second thing, where I'm more suspicious with community building, I really see that a lot of big products and successful products have like a community, but I'm always wondering, maybe because I'm a lazy person, maybe because I am like a time efficient person, who is signing up for a Discord community and why?
Yeah, it's a good question. Community building might sound a bit more fuzzy. The way I look at it is that basically community is a group of people that tend to believe in the same values around a given topic, right? And that tend to also share other principles with each other. And so for us, Bento speaks to the builder. And the builder could be a designer, could be an engineer, could be the famous design engineer coming up now, could be an AI builder, but could also be a marketeer or a fitness coach out there. Just someone who builds something. These people, we, the builders, I count myself and Mujeeb and my co-founder to that group. We just like to explore other things because we are in need of creative stimulus. We need other creativity around us. And also, to be honest, we want to share what we're doing. Because at the end of the day, this human thing of wanting recognition from your peer group or just like wanting a little bit of sugar out there is sort of a driving force that leads you to interact with people. And so what we believed with Bento and what we then clearly saw is that there is this latent need of people to connect with others from that environment. And so, yeah, people wanted to come in and a lot of them did. I mean, if you go to our Discord, it's thousands of users big. Our Twitter obviously grew from zero to, I don't know where it is today, tens of thousands of followers. Just because we nurtured sort of that community with constant product talk because we knew this is what they like. And also because it gave us sort of insights into what we need to build. And so it was just sort of a matching of values from both sides. So it was authentic. I believe authenticity in community building is something that has to be a cornerstone. Otherwise, yes, it's sort of a place of shallowness, and then obviously no one sort of predicts.
Okay, but like the main reason people signed up for is like for promoting their own bento, communicating like maybe questions, but also communicating feature requests. Or what was like the hook which made people sign up?
To the community activities as such? Yeah, I think there was obviously some self-promotion going on. However, we also have sort of a place where people can discuss their own products, product ideas, where they can share designs, where they can just talk to each other about product and other things related to a builder. So I believe, yes, they just wanted to be part of a group of like-minded people. And for us, obviously, I think more interestingly, like community from a product perspective is tremendously valuable because you create sort of a group of people that likes your product because they identify with it. And identifying with a product is powerful because the attachment to the product goes beyond the feature set of the product, meaning you build a soft mode. Let's just call it soft mode because it's not an a, a tremendously big moat, but it is a moat for you to gain time if there would be a competitor coming into the market. Because users don't jump to another product because that product might have a more rich or better feature set. They will not jump immediately because they identify with your product beyond the feature set. They identify with your product because of the values that you shared around that product. I think that's one of the other advantages of having a community built around the product.
Okay, so that's definitely something you will do like in the future when building new products. Like if you have a chance, build a community around it. And that's
if it's innate to what the product is, meaning if it's authentic to the product, yes.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I really like having this conversations, learning about stuff, because I never really build a community. I think for some products, it definitely can be amazing. And I mean, best cases, if you have users communicating, okay, that's a feature we would like to have, and then being in a conversation. I love that idea. How did it feel for you to sell your baby to like a big company? Speaking about emotions.
Yeah, it was definitely a roller coaster. Yeah. In many regards. It felt like you go through the 7 stages of grief. But you have the tremendous highs as well. It's obviously, it's a team management question as well. How do you prepare your team to go to the acquirer? How do you break the news? It was challenging. It was definitely not just an easy decision. There are many, many factors that play into that.
If it was not an easy decision, what was the driving factor in the end? Did you just think, okay, it was the next logical step? Or do you think, okay, monetization for a micro page can be hard, or link to a link in bio page can be hard? Or what was the main driving factor which made you think in the end, okay, that's the best decision for us as team, as product?
Yeah, I think that the main driving factor was it's the next step towards scale, definitely. We were razor focused on achieving, generational scale in that sense. I was obsessed with bringing back MySpace, because I believe now it's the time again for MySpace to happen, just because of the fragmentation of the internet, the general sort of frustration with the current social networks, and many other reasons. If we have time, we can get into them. But so I truly believed it's the time for MySpace to happen again. And when then approached by Linktree, and we started to talk about Linktree scale, which was mind-boggling. Like their monthly scale that they have was mind-boggling. And I believed plugging into that system, be it under the name of Linktree or Bento, I didn't care. I wanted to have a generationally big sort of company / product out there. And I believe Linktree was that stepping stone that would help me get there much faster.
I have a really stupid question, but I never used MySpace. Can you explain to me? I mean, I know MySpace from movies and stuff, but I never used it myself. What was amazing about MySpace, and why do you think it's time it's time for a new MySpace to come?
Yeah, I mean, MySpace at the time was really a space on the internet that you could sort of design in a way that you felt like represented yourself the best. And it was sort of a very early social network, because again, you could connect with others, in the sense that you would see who saw you, and you could sort of jump in between sort of different spaces. You could express yourself in a holistic manner, not all encompassing, but sort of holistic manner. And so I believed today it's time to bring that back, because we have such fragmented online identities that people grow frustrated with, because you need to keep up with so many different places. You have so many different friend graphs. You have so many different incentives. There is the general toxicity of, you know, comparison out there. As soon as you're in these open social networks, you start comparing yourself and likes and views and all of that nonsense. And so there seems to be this general sort of pullback from all of these networks into smaller groups, friend groups primarily, and DM groups. And so I believe the next logical step will be to sort of have a pull together of all of that and a cleaning of all of these fragments into one tranquil, beautiful page where you can breathe again and you can actually focus on what matters, right? And yeah, early numbers at Bento were promising. And so I believed this to be the time. And so I think one learning was that I wanted it to happen faster than it naturally could. So going to Linktree might have been sort of jumping the gun in that sense, that even though we would get Linktree's scale and data and sort of acquisition machine, probably the product is not there today to sort of absorb all of that sort of scale anyways. And so that perceived shortcut that I wanted to take probably was in some way laziness, I'd say, if I reflect. Because yeah, there are truly no shortcuts. I think we should have doubled down on the grunt work, and we should have kept going step by step instead of trying to jump 100 steps by getting Linktree's acquisition machine and scale to work for us. So yeah, I believe that MySpace still happens, but probably in 3 to 5 years from now, which would have been the natural timeline for a product like Bento.
And with the main advantage compared to other profiles, that it's more like focused on like exclusive spaces around specific topics, like more like in this kind of group functionality. Did I got you right?
Yeah, so selective groups, and just like a more clean, sober environment, less based on pure sugar dopamine, more based on just real world achievements and real world just happenings in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what's really interesting, what's happening right now, is that you have these kind of subcultures building themselves on like not perfect fitting technologies. So you have like all these Slack channels, which are exclusive invite only.
Correct.
You have all these like Discord channels for sure. You have all these Telegram channels. Nowadays, there are also WhatsApp communities like coming up. And it's like a safe space where I, for example, know like it's, people would probably think it's insane, but in one Slack group, for example, I was writing last year, like, does someone has a car or a scooter? And then someone was writing, yeah, you can have my scooter. And I was transferring money to a random person I never met before in the internet. But I just knew, okay, this Slack group is like safe space. Everyone here is invite only. I can trust the people in here. And yeah, I think that's definitely missing right now in the social media ecosystem. And I also really feel what you see, what you say, with that urge for having a no dopamine place, having no reels, no shorts, no TikTok, no like videos, just pure text, just information, just stuff which is relevant for me, and no ads everywhere. Okay, talking about ads, monetization. That's something I'm wondering the whole time. Like, how do you monetize at Bento? Or do you monetize? Or is this like a hard part? Because I think like people are like really lazy with willingness to pay, especially if it's B2C in such an environment.
Yeah, I think that the question is, do we monetize at Bento? The answer is we don't. Does that mean we did not think about it? No. I think at Bento, there was a clear way to monetization. Actually, let me rephrase that. I know was a clear way to monetization at Bento. And I know because we got several emails per day begging us to monetize for personal domains, analytics, more personalization. So there was a clear way to monetization. However, since it was so clear, I pushed it off into the future because I believed to reach bigger scale first before I start turning on monetization. And again, this goes back to the idea of I didn't want to put any friction between someone starting onboarding Bento and them having the most beautiful expression of themselves on the internet. And so I didn't want to distract with, oh, like here you can have your personal domain and here you can have further analytics and all of that jazz. I didn't want to have just yet. I just wanted to have the cleanest, most beautiful millions of Bentos out there before we sort of satisfy the requests for deeper analytics or personal domains.
Linktree does this. So at Linktree, I checked for pricing beforehand. Like for extra money, you get like affiliate marketing tools, scheduling, conversion tracking, like in general, deeper analytics, personalized like stuff, which is removing like a little bit like the Linktree like branding. Is this then like clearly planned for Bento as well, or do you not want this path to be upcoming, or how is the future planned for Bento with this? Because I guess at some point Linktree wants you guys to monetize.
You know, I think the interesting part about what you just talked about is, from a broad perspective, the topic of pricing and packaging. And if you go back to the list that you were just reading, you can sort of understand or abstract what Linktree believes will monetize well, which is, you know, the social scheduling, the email collection, all of that stuff is about professionalism of the user. Now they also layered in some personalization expression features, which if you listen to my previous 20 minutes, you know I don't agree with, because I believe expression should come at zero cost because it makes the product better and the viewing experience better, makes you feel better. But I do believe that what Linktree is getting right is the idea that the more professional a user is in doing business online, the more they will be willing to pay for a product, and especially for a product or features that help them get business done more efficient online. Right? And so from a pricing and packaging sort of perspective, what is interesting to think about also for your own product is, what is sort of the line I believe in that I can start sort of monetizing my users in? Who is that user profile that I want to grow with as a product? And for Linktree, now to repeat it, it's very natural. Because the more business you do online, the more likely you are to sort of have multiple profiles online, so the more likely you are to have a Linktree, and also the more likely you will want features such as social scheduling or email collection or social commerce. And so layering that into your sort of packaging, into your pricings, makes a lot of sense.
And for Bento, I mean, you were playing around with ideas like going to glory MySpace time back again. Do you have your ideas in mind, like how you could do choose a different way of monetization? Because I personally think there's also like a path that slowly people understand, okay, if I'm not paying, I'm the product. So I think there's like a need sometimes for business models. And I think like of course also at Linktree, like people are not the product, they are the customer. But within social media, it's really often that people recognize nowadays, okay, I'm the product. I'm not the customer, I'm the product. I'm being sold and I for me, it feels like when you talk about MySpace, that it was a better place to be. And I know that people are willing to pay for Slack groups, etc. Is this some other way of monetization you thought about? Or in general, did you thought about different ways of monetization beside of like having better tracking, etc.?
Yeah, so I think this comes back to, if you think about a nascent product and its possible ways that it could make money, I think the most powerful frameworks to think about or help you think about that are sort of centered around the innate capability of the product to solve a specific problem in that sense. And for us at Bento, this thought led to us building a destination, right? We wanted to build a destination for you to express yourself, because then you and your audience can connect. Let's just call it more authentic. And so now how I would go about thinking about the monetization question is taking that fact that we just mentioned, that Bento is a better destination than a lot of other products out there. I would start to think around the idea, okay, how can I monetize a destination? And then I would abstract that further in the sense, like, what does it mean to be a destination? Well, to me, it means you have time of the user. The user actually spends time on your product, probably browsing, reading, watching, because listening, because you have your music, your videos, your pictures, you all have that all in Bento. And so now I would think, okay, they spend time sort of consuming that information. In what mind space is that user? Is that user in a mind space of sort of wanting to collect information? Is that user in the mind space of wanting to make a transaction? And then once I start figuring that out, I would then start implementing monetization aspects.
Okay, but like, do you have a few examples? Because for me right now, it's more abstract.
One clear example obviously would be commerce, right? Because we do have many Bento users who have like their little e-commerce store on Bento, WhatsApp stores, or just generally actually Google Drive stores, where they sort of have links to Google Drives where they show a product PDF that they want to sell, a hardware product or whatever. And so I believe next to having personal domains, which helps you define yourself even further on the internet, next to having analytics, which helps you sort of understand the users that come to you and help you optimize your Bento, it feels like that commerce is something that would work rather well on Bento. And obviously, every sort of monetization model around e-commerce, social commerce, feels like could work well on Bento.
Yeah, I like the domain part, definitely. That would be something where I personally would be willing to pay money, because I mean, mm-hmm. I also have to pay money for a domain. And I mean, right now, everything is hosted on luisrique.com. Really? So I build, like, I develop my own link tree.
Sick domain.
Or my own. Weird domain, but the only one which was free. For me it was just simple and straightforward that I bought my domain, developed something. But I think for someone who's not able to develop him or herself, like, the domain is like really important. I will also wonder why Linktree doesn't offer this thing, and it's just like understandable that a domain costs money. That's definitely something which makes sense to me. Email would make sense to me, even if it's just a forwarder or something. Like these little details of like a freelancer or something operating on a professional level. But just having a basic like infrastructure which makes him feel like good and make his customer feels good about what he or she's doing. But I don't know. It just feels natural to me. Okay. Yep. Before we come to an end, I think your like CV is too long to walk through all the steps. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really interesting seeing that you lived like in Vienna, you lived in Berlin, you lived in Zurich, you lived in San Francisco. You had like all these different steps in your life, bringing you to the point that you founded Bento. And I think it's really interesting that, yeah, in general, like your life going through all these different cities, going through these different product roles. If someone wants to build a company in the long run, what are some learnings out of your life which you would recommend to other people? And also, can you compare the cities like a little bit? And yeah, can you give us like a little deep dive through your life?
I can
that's
try,
contradicting. Yeah. Little deep dive, but
I mean, that's a broad question. Like, what would I recommend, or what could I share about, or learnings about what it takes to build a company? I think I started to realize, I think early on, maybe we can jump into that, and that sort of answers all of the questions that you just had. I was lucky enough to realize early on the power of community, the power of a group of people pulling each other up and supporting each other by also being very demanding towards each other. And there were a couple moments in my life where I just got thrown into, and only afterwards I realized that the biggest outcome was to have a long-term view and having these people around you that were uplifting, supportive, demanding. And the first was when I was at uni in Basel, Switzerland. I was studying biophysics. It was a place where, to be honest, I didn't feel 100% like I belonged. I didn't feel like I belonged with the people there. I loved the studies. And I think not feeling like I belonged with the people sort of gave me more time to just spend on the science, so on biophysics, which was a true passion of mine. And so that gave me fulfillment. But it also led me to a place where I felt almost alone, like, or not part of a group, let's just say that. I had a very fulfilling relationship at the time, which really gave me a lot in sort of that environment of my life. But I always felt like I'm not part of this group at university. Like, I'm not part of these people who go out and party or spend time after class with each other. And because we didn't have the same interests and didn't have the same worldviews, the same values. I only realized that after, when I went to ETH, ETH in Zurich, in Zurich, which is a tremendous university focused on, you know, fostering the brightest minds on this planet, especially in robotics. And so getting there, like, I remember that feeling the first day, like walking around the halls, like you had all of these other crazy ambitious or just like driven people from all around the world. And I was like, whoa, there are other people that sort of dare to think big and dare to be different, and just have a worldview that was more the worldview that I had at the time, which was, okay, let's push for innovation. Let's try to create something. I don't want to join a company. I don't want to go to Roche or Novartis. Like, I don't want to be in these places. And so then getting to ETH was sort of that time in my life where I started to get that feeling of belonging to a group. And with that, the uplifting effects of a group. We were all pushing each other, but very supportive of each other. And we would not play each other down and go like, oh, you're crazy for having that idea. We would rather say, just try it out. And I'm willing to give you a weekend of mine so we can try it out together. And so this, I think, was the most transformative learning in my life. That, yeah, it's easy to say, it takes a village. But it truly does. It truly takes a community, a group of people around you, because it makes sometimes daring things, like taking the risk of building a company, it just normalizes it. If everyone around you does it, it's just normal. And this goes back to the beginning, like when we were off the mic, off the record, and we talked about, oh, it's so risky to sort of build a company. And I asked, like, what is the risk? Because truly, I don't see the risk. Like, and that's just because I'm in an environment where it's just normalized. We just like to try things. We see it as trying. And if we fuck up, well, okay, we fuck up. Then we do the next thing. And so that idea of having people around you, of creating opportunity through authentic connection with other people, was transformational. And this then led to sort of me being at ETH in Zurich and building sort of an early AR prototype that then led to my first company, Rosy Reality, which was building AR entertainment and AR foundational technology. And also this only happened because I cold emailed someone in San Francisco who was starting a fund for AR and VR. And I did that cold email because I felt like it is possible to reach someone around the globe. Because again, everyone around me was kind of doing it. And then I met this person, a venture capitalist at a big name fund in San Francisco. And after like 30 minutes of talking to him, he started to introduce me to all of his friends. And these were all of the big name VCs in San Francisco, all of the names that are on the internet. And I was like, holy cow, like now I can speak to all of these people all of a sudden. And again, the value of community, the value of authentic relationship with people sort of became clear to me, because these connections, I think it's important that they're authentic and you start to have, you know, care about the same things, have the same values. They led then to me being able to build Rosy, right? And then the same with Bento. It was basically the community. We then were taken up by the Sequoia seed stage program, ARC. And again, we came together with 30 other founders, all at sort of the same stage, struggling with the same things. That then this led again to an environment where we were demanding of each other, but so supportive. And so I think, yeah, when I have to give someone, I don't know, advice on how to build a company, next to, you know, all of the product stuff that we can talk about and all of the tactical things that we can talk about, I think, yeah, build authentic, supportive, demanding relationships with people. And authenticity is about caring. Care about them, right? And this will sort of, I think, give you back way, way, way more than you can ever imagine in the short term. So that long-term approach to building out your life and your community around you gives back heaps.
I think uni is like an amazing place for that, but you can be really lucky, or as you like told at your first place, like also some unis don't really give like an inspirational like community. I would say I was something in between, so I met some cool people there, but not like everyone was actually interested in web development and computer science and stuff. Some people were just smelling money and then going for that. I think starting a podcast is an amazing opportunity meet cool people. So I highly can recommend to everyone. I mean, you took the time to talk to me today. Beside of it, do you think there are like other typical things to get like the foot in the door?
To get the foot in the door, in what house?
Like in the way of like building community, meeting like-minded people, etc. Because I think some people get this naturally given via their network at uni. Some people get this via like their parents, their friends of their parents. Some people like are really talented developers and get into like a Sequoia program or do a Y Combinator batch or whatever. But I think beside of that, you maybe have some ideas of, okay, how to get into these communities of like-minded people.
Yeah, I think we could talk about multiple things, right? There is an aspect of this question of how does a young person build a network, for instance. I believe, again, I believe in long-term and long-term providing value. And so I think a common fallacy, especially for people early in their career, is that they want to have immediately a big network. And they start reaching out to everyone. And sort of then this leads to this LinkedIn noise or Twitter noise, right? And that's just because there is no value in this connection, right? And so I think thinking long-term and building long-term leads to providing value for the given space that you are in. And so again, this brings us back to the learning of one of the learnings of Bento. There is no shortcut. Right? So you have to first put in the work, sort of the grunt work to create value for someone out there in your industry, in your environment, and then sort of use that to start building connections. And it can be that you start building something and then you reach out to someone who you saw that was building something similar and you go like, hey, look, I've been building this, like, what do you think? And then that person has the ability to look at what you've built and sort of see, is that something they agree with or not? But then you already have a certain sort of connection point, right? And you can't, like, human relationships, you can't rush. You can't just sort of have a cheat code and then go like from, oh, now we're best friends, right? So it takes time to nurture that. And yeah, I think first giving value before asking for value or you know, just spamming people, I think is a way to think about it. Right. For instance, when you, I mean, or then once you've built value, you can then sort of apply what you are doing. For instance, you message me on Twitter or wherever that was, and I'm like, sure, like Lewis seems cool and he did this awesome podcast. Of course I wanna jump on, right? Because it seems like by you building something, by you founding something, it feels like, oh, we have common values here. Like and it feels like, yeah, we can exchange and talk about stuff. And be generally additive.
Yeah. I wanted to talk with cool people, and then I was like, yeah, okay, but they don't have a reason to talk to me, so I have to find a reason for them to talk to me. Yeah. I think that's an interesting part to like think about first. Okay, how can I, from my end, like give some kind of value? Because then, like, surprisingly, many things are possible. Like my first tech conferences where I wanted to go, I was not able to afford the conference tickets, and I was just like, okay, fuck it. I built like an online magazine, and I asked if I can go there as press and media, and it was actually possible. So I think there are like really often ways if you really want something.
Yeah, I think you know. This also goes to what I want to emphasize is sort of this long-term thinking. There's so much short-termism, so much FOMOism in the market that to create true value in this world, it just takes a long time. You can't rush these things, right? And I think constantly reminding yourself of that we're not, even though social media or the internet likes you to believe otherwise, we're not in a short-term world. Like, good stuff needs time, right? And so be proactive about that.
I think that are beautiful end words for this podcast. I think from now on, whatever I would ask, like, I would make it worse. Thank you so much for taking the time. I really agree on what you said with long-term thinking is the way, and I really recognize and. So many founders in this podcast being like stubborn about an idea pays off for lots of people. So thank you so much for sharing your thoughts today in my podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. It was fun.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I learned a lot about product-led growth, community building, MySpace, Linktree, Bento, being like a product person and like building like a cool connection to other founders. And I hope you like the episode as much as I did and I do. If you like the episode, give it a like, give it a good review, share it with friends. And yeah, if you do this, then happy to see you in the next episode as well. Thank you so much. Have a lovely day. Bye-bye.